Good morning, Ava. It is Sunday, July 19, 2026, and today's morning signal is really about one question: when does a true investment story become a dangerous capital allocation story?
Good morning, Guy. Before we answer that, today's written podcast brief checked 34 podcasts and found 3 episodes with confirmed timestamps inside the strict prior 24-hour window. All 3 had full transcripts. 2 came from local whisper transcription of public RSS audio, and 1 came from public YouTube auto captions. The written brief also warns that none of the podcast claims were independently re-underwritten against filings, live options data, legal dockets, or market prices, so we are preserving that evidence boundary here.
Let us start with excess returns. In the episode It Only Happens at Bottoms, Andy Constand told Jack Forehand and Justin Carboneau that the unusual signal was not merely an AI rally. It was the plumbing underneath it: low correlation across stocks, very large moves in individual names beneath a relatively stable index, sharply higher realized and implied volatility in AI infrastructure names, and out-of-the-money calls priced richer than puts after a long advance.
Excess returns framed that upside skew as historically strange because rich calls usually appear near bottoms, when investors who capitulated are scrambling to regain upside exposure. Constand said seeing that structure near highs, alongside parabolic prices and expensive single-stock volatility, looked like speculative frenzy. But the nuance matters. He explicitly stopped short of declaring a definitive top.
Excess returns therefore supported a hedging conclusion more strongly than a directional short. Constand said concentrated holders could exploit the asymmetry with a collar, sell an expensive out-of-the-money call, and use the proceeds to buy downside protection. His historical analogy was Mark Cuban's collar on Yahoo shares around the 2000 peak. Constand's own reported trade was about relative volatility in hedging, not a naked market bet.
Excess returns also said the signal had partly normalized after AI-linked stocks reversed. Call volatility declined, while put demand and downside skew began to recover. Yet implied volatility stayed elevated because realized moves were still extreme. The written brief's takeaway is precise. The first break in a speculative cycle can appear as rotation and dispersion rather than an index collapse.
So, from excess returns, the practical monitor is not just the headline index. Watch call versus put implied volatility and cross-stock correlation. If a rebound brings another surge in expensive calls while correlation remains low, the brief says that would indicate speculative demand has not cleared. If volatility falls while broad earnings revisions validate end-user returns, that would challenge the excess thesis.
Excess returns then connected the options signal to the funding mechanism. Constand argued that hyperscalers and other compute buyers can no longer finance every promised infrastructure project from internal cash flow. The AI cycle increasingly depends on equity and debt markets absorbing new issuance, and those proceeds flow into a narrow set of chip, memory, wafer, and fabrication equipment suppliers.
Excess returns describe the causal chain this way: capital availability funds the build concentrates revenue among infrastructure winners, concentration produces extreme winners and losers, and those moves raise both single-name volatility and financing vulnerability. If investors demand wider spreads or refuse incremental issuance, CapEx can slow before end-user productivity has been proven.
Excess returns also described weaker post-issuance pricing in recent equity and bond financing connected to space, hyperscalers, and data centers as evidence of market indigestion. The written brief explicitly labels those as episode claims, not independently verified tape data. Even with that caveat, the mechanism gives us a useful question. Are projects being financed because their cash returns are visible, or because capital markets are still willing to extend the narrative?
The excess returns macro view was not outright recessionary. Constand described the economy as okay, supported by AI capital expenditure and household dissaving. But neither source of support is permanent. He did not see household dissaving as an immediate constraint because asset prices remain elevated. He treated financing absorption as the nearer risk.
Excess returns used what Constand called the not enough pie framework. Nominal gross domestic product is the total transaction pool, while corporate earnings can claim more of it through output, productivity, inflation, or a larger capital share of income. Constand said even aggressive assumptions could not reconcile all the profit expectations embedded across AI winners, hyperscalers, and the rest of the market.
The written podcast brief labels its conclusion as TIFF inference: aggregate free cash flow after CapEx is the clean monitor, not revenue growth or model usage alone. That is the distinction I like. The technology can be transformative while the securities still assume too many companies captured the same scarce profit pool.
Excess returns made the valuation trap explicit. Constance said some chip names can look inexpensive on forward earnings because earnings have already doubled or tripled, and consensus expects that pace to persist. In that setup, the risk is inside the denominator. A modest forward price-to-earnings ratio does not provide safety if normalized revenue growth, gross margin, or customer capex would produce much lower earnings.
The podcast brief STIF view is therefore not AI is fake. It is that the investable question has moved from whether the technology is transformative to which companies can finance the build and still earn an acceptable return after funding cost, competitive response, and end-user price.
Confirmation would be persistent dispersion, rich call skew, wider financing spreads, and estimate cuts among CapEx buyers.
Falsification would be falling implied volatility combined with broad earnings revisions that validate end-user return on investment and permit internally funded CapEx.
Now, let us take the counterexample from We Study Billionaires. In Tip 832, Fairfax Financial, Carl Grieve and Sean O'Malley described Fairfax as three linked engines: global property and casualty insurance and reinsurance, life and runoff operations, and non-insurance holdings. The insurance engine creates float, Hamblin Watsa Investment Council allocates it, and decentralized subsidiaries provide operating cash flow and acquisition optionality.
We Study Billionaires cited float growth from $13 million in 1985 to about $40.8 billion, a long-term investment return near 7.7%, and roughly $1.8 billion of 2025 underwriting profit. The hosts also cited approximately 18.7% annual book value per share compounding over four decades and about 18% annualized share price appreciation since 1985.
We Study Billionaires said the quality improvement came from underwriting, not financial engineering alone. Fairfax's average combined ratio was above 100% from 1986 through 2005, but below 100 since 2006 and around 97% over the past decade, according to the hosts. Below 100 means the insurer is paid to hold float before investment returns.
We Study Billionaires also supplied the falsification test. Favorable prior year reserve development since 2020 has added earnings, but adverse reserve development or a sustained combined ratio above 100 would break the free leverage mechanism. Float is attractive only while the insurance liability is correctly priced.
We Study Billionaires highlighted opportunistic capital allocation. The hosts discussed Fairfax selling a minority stake in Odyssey at roughly 1.7 times book while repurchasing Fairfax shares near 0.9 times book. They also discussed total return swaps on Fairfax during the pandemic drawdown that later generated roughly $2 billion in cash, and a share count decline from about 28 million in 2018 to about 23 million.
But We Study Billionaires also showed why a successful narrative can become the next mistake. Fairfax's correct housing credit trade was followed by years of equity hedges that consumed much of operating income from 2010 through 2016. A good prior can be pushed too far. The same warning applies when genuine AI progress becomes a reason to capitalize peak earnings indefinitely.
We Study Billionaires reported about $14 billion of debt, $11.6 billion of net debt, roughly 10 times interest coverage, and debt to capital generally maintained near 26 to 33%. The host said Fairfax estimates that a 10% decline in global equities would reduce net earnings by about $1 billion, while a 20% decline would reduce earnings by nearly $2 billion.
We Study Billionaires also presented valuation cases, but these are the host's models, not TIFF targets. Grieve modeled roughly $4,600 Canadian dollars including dividends by 2030 under a 15% return on equity and a 1.3 times terminal book multiple.
He said that implied about a 14.7% annual return.
His bear case was around $3,000 Canadian dollars and about a 5.3% annual return.
We Study Billionaires did not turn that quality case into a blind action call. The written brief says Grieve and O'Malley were favorable on the business, but restrained on entry price. O'Malley preferred discounted software names and Uber to Fairfax or adding Berkshire, while Grieve would become interested in Fairfax around $1,500 Canadian dollars. Those are their preferences, not TIFF recommendations.
The podcast brief's positioning conclusion is to put Fairfax on the watch list, not the action list.
The host's weighted value was only modestly above the price they cited, while catastrophe, reserve, portfolio, and succession risks remain material. The deep dive trigger would be either a meaningful price dislocation or evidence that underwriting and reserve quality are weakening.
now back to technology through excess returns. Constan was optimistic about the 10-year productivity outcome and skeptical about the medium-term earnings bridge. In his framing, short-term purchases of chips and data centers support output, and long-term tools should improve productivity. The vulnerable interval is between those points, when model providers subsidize tokens and users have not yet shown enough willingness to pay.
Excess returns argued that companies may discover their artificial intelligence bills exceed the cost of the human workflow they hope to replace. Constan's competitive framing was winner-take-most. One frontier model might earn exceptional returns, but all heavily capitalized models cannot capture the same monopoly-like profit pool.
Excess returns also said cheaper or open models could increase total usage and benefit semiconductor demand while reducing pricing power at the model layer. The written brief calls that a TIFF inference barbell. Hardware utilization can rise while model economics deteriorate. The confirming indicators are token price, paid conversion, inference gross margin, customer concentration, and whether compute is financed from internal cash flow or external capital.
That is an important cross-current from the podcast brief. Insurance float and data center financing are both forms of leverage. Each can magnify returns when the underlying liability is correctly priced and cash returns exceed funding cost. Each can reverse when the liability is mispriced. Reserve deficiencies force insurers to add capital, while disappointing AI cash flows can widen spreads and strand capex.
The podcast brief labels the parallel monitors as TIFF inference. For Fairfax, watch reserve development and the combined ratio. For AI buyers, watch interest coverage and free cash flow after capex. Different industries, same discipline. Do not call leverage free until the liability has survived a full cycle.
Let us turn to policy, again through excess returns. Constan said Section 122 tariffs expire on July 24 and must be replaced or fall away, making the coming week a concentrated policy window. He described possible restoration through Section 301, partial replacement, or a slower negotiation path.
Excess returns estimated that a roughly $100 billion change in tariff revenue could move gross domestic product by approximately 25 to 30 basis points. The written brief is emphatic that the date, legal route, and estimate are transcript claims requiring primary source verification before anyone trades on them.
Excess returns described the directional mechanism. Fewer tariffs would be stimulative and disinflationary in the near term. Fuller replacement would raise the price level and modestly slow growth. The uncertainty is not only the ultimate rate. Refund timing, collection sequencing, and corporate pricing decisions can change how the effect reaches activity and margins.
Excess returns also discussed monetary policy. Constan rejected the idea that investors should buy equities simply because the Federal Reserve will always intervene near current prices. He expects aggressive easing in a genuine crisis, but only after material harm to employment and financial stability.
Excess returns said Constan preferred a smaller central bank balance sheet paired with lower short-term rates. He argued that combination could reduce support for asset prices while easing Main Street funding. He also thought reduced forward guidance was appropriate near neutral policy, with guidance becoming most valuable when rates are constrained near zero.
The third in-window item came from the indicator from Planet Money, but the written brief correctly keeps it in proportion. The three-minute item was a trailer for NPR Embedded, the Seattle Times, and KOWS We Keep Us Safe, concerning the still-unsolved 2020 killing of 16-year-old Antonio Mays Jr. in Seattle's Capitol Hill organized protest. It advertised new witnesses and previously unpublished evidence, but contained no economic analysis.
So the indicator contributes no market conclusion today. The podcast brief treats it as a source awareness item, not a macro episode. That matters because a strict publication window should not become an excuse to manufacture investment relevance where none exists.
Let S connect the day's strongest ideas. The podcast brief says capital allocation quality is the common denominator. Excess returns presents AI buyers committing capital before the end-user profit pool is proven. We Study Billionaires presents Fairfax accepting insurance risk when pricing is adequate and deploying float when assets are mispriced.
The podcast brief lays out the causal chain as capital availability, then an investment surge, then winner concentration, and finally greater funding and volatility risk. The antidote is not reflexive pessimism. It is explicit hurdle rates and the willingness to hold cash when the return does not clear them.
The podcast brief's second cross-current is that free leverage only works while the liability is correctly priced. Fairfax gets paid to hold float when underwriting remains profitable. Data center debt can amplify returns when project cash flow exceeds funding cost. Underpriced insurance risk or overestimated AI cash flow turns the same leverage against the equity.
The podcast brief S third cross current is narrative success creating the next error. Fairfax as housing crisis insight became costly when hedging persisted after the evidence changed. Genuine AI success can become similarly dangerous if investors extrapolate every infrastructure winner forever. The discipline is to stop paying for protection when the evidence changes and stop capitalizing peak earnings when the aggregate profit pool cannot support all claimants.
The written brief also records an absence signal. None of today's episodes supplied audited hyperscaler-level returns on incremental AI capital, and the indicator supplied no economic content. That means today's strongest evidence concerns market structure, financing, and capital allocation discipline, not realized artificial intelligence productivity.
Here is the watch list, beginning with excess returns. July 24th is the claims section 122 tariff expiry or replacement date. Before positioning, verify the legal route and announced rates from primary sources. Over the next 1 to 2 weeks, watch reception for AI and data center issuance, including new issue concessions, credit spreads, and whether CapEx buyers reduce or defer projects.
From excess returns, on the next rebound in AI leaders, watch call versus put implied volatility skew. Renewed rich calls combined with low index correlation would confirm lingering speculative demand. Falling implied volatility plus broad, positive earnings revisions, and internally financed CapEx would weaken the speculative excess case.
From We Study Billionaires, at the next Fairfax reporting cycle, watch the combined ratio, prior year reserve development, interest coverage, and investment income sensitivity. Adverse reserve development or a sustained combined ratio above 100 would challenge the compounding thesis. Also watch any formal change in Prem Watsa's role or elevation of President and Chief Operating Officer Peter Clark, because decentralization reduces but does not eliminate key person risk.
And from the podcast brief S TIF framework, keep aggregate free cash flow after CapEx at the center. Revenue growth can coexist with value destruction if funding cost rises, margins normalize, or several firms are priced to own the same profit pool. Conversely, strong cash conversion and broad estimate revisions would be real evidence that the end-user economics are catching up with the infrastructure narrative.
That is today's morning signal. A stable index can conceal a violent redistribution underneath, leverage can look free until its liability is tested, and a correct narrative is not the same thing as a correctly priced security.
We'll leave it there for Sunday, July 19th. Read the full podcast brief for the detailed source table and caveats. Verify the July 24th policy claim before acting, and keep the evidence boundary intact. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.